This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
Karina is going to run the show. I'm going to be in the background.
And Karina Anglada.
I could never. Oof.
Holding space for others. Sometimes in this industry, we can easily get caught up in occupying space and opportunities for ourselves, and we don't leave the door open for those behind us. However, that's not the way that Lauren Harper goes about her business. Now, the social media manager for the Detroit Lions, she makes it her mission to keep the door of opportunity open for more women. As we wrap up our Women's History Month spotlight, Lauren also discusses the value in networking across.
Darius, are you all good?
Showtime.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right. You want to give me a time?
Let's go 04.
I was off not a little bad. Bit. It was. I think I was a little early. I was excited.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Sports Creative Podcast. I am so excited for another episode with the wonderful, extraordinary Lauren Harper. She is a social media manager with the Detroit Lions currently. And fun fact, she and I used to work together at the Detroit Pistons. So super excited for this conversation. And Lauren, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I think this is my first official podcast. So this is definitely a bucket list moment. And I'm so glad we get to do it together. Like you said, we were just talking about this before we started that like, it feels like eons ago that we were working at the Pistons, like early 20s, don't know anything about anything. Yes. So I love that we're still here and we're still friends and we're still kind of doing our thing. And now we have this little like, it's kind of like a full circle moment, but I feel like our circle is still moving. Mm-hmm. The circle is still moving.
Sure.
So this is our, you know, this is our next era. And so like, hopefully, you know, we'll do this again in our 40s. We'll see.
I love it. Oh, you're speaking it into existence. It's awesome.
Exactly. I'm all about that. I'm all about the manifestations. I have to like not get too ahead of myself. Because like after games, I'll be like, I manifested that win. We did it, guys.
Wait, that's actually real. Like I've shot games before and I'm like, oh, it's because I was in my shooting spot, right?
Exactly.
Like that's why, you know, Klay Thompson scored right there. And it's like, no,
right.
In reality, it's like, girl, check yourself.
Exactly. Those are like the little things that I have to like tell myself to keep going and to keep making it through these, you know, long seasons. So whatever we have to use, right?
Totally. Well, I'm super excited. We have a lot of great content to get to. It'll be Lauren and I, and Darius Thomas is on the line, and he'll be chiming in here and there. But I am so excited to chat with you, Lauren, because I feel like you have an awesome career journey. And so for those who aren't familiar, how did you get to where you are now with the Lions?
It's so funny. I feel like I'm answering that question differently based on my headspace in the moment. Because sometimes I'll think that it started off in high school when I joined the school paper and I realized that journalism was a thing that I could possibly do. And sports journalism was also a thing that I could possibly do. And that, you know, took me to being an English major in college, which led to this, which led to that. But The career fair answer is I started off as an English and kind of sports journalism concentration at Spelman College, which is the HBCU in Atlanta. And luckily, that is where like Turner Sports is located. So, and also obviously they have all four major sports teams. So it was a huge sports city. So that's kind of where I got my start in the sports journalism world and to, you know, date myself a little bit, Twitter was like not even a thing. Digital media was barely a thing. So I thought I might have to go into video or broadcasting or something like, or public relations, you know, to be part of like the sports world. But I had various internships with different sports teams and also with different communications companies. And I think college is really where I got my start in kind of getting a taste of the sports world, which I liked it a lot. At that point, I was a basketball fan. So, you know, it was kind of like marrying those two things together. And as I realized that I like to write, again, marrying all of those things together. So yeah. I got an internship over the summer when I was at home, home in Detroit with the Detroit Shock, which is the WNBA team. It is no longer, you know, no longer there.
I know.
Sad. I'm so, you know, so sad. But it was a really good start and, you know, to kind of jump around a little bit for people who want to get their start in sports, I would definitely look outside of the Big Four, and the WNBA is a great way to get started because the staff is smaller. And as an intern, you can kind of get your hands in that many more pots just because the manpower isn't necessarily there the same way that you would with a basketball team. So as a little side note, but anyway, I worked in the web department for the Detroit Shock. And at the, again, at that time, it was all owned by Palace Sports and Entertainment, which is obviously the Pistons as well. It was all owned by the same company, which is actually, I don't want to say it's rare, but there's not as many as you think. Like even with Atlanta, the Hawks and the Atlanta Dream, they're not owned by the same people. So I kind of lucked out again that I kind of got my experience with the Palace Sports and Entertainment, which is essentially the Pistons too. So I went back to school. I was a sophomore at that time. And I finished, you know, finished school. And a few months after I graduated, the Pistons had an opening in the web department. So basically the Pistons version of what I was doing with the Shock. Again, they really got me in on the ground floor. It taught me about web. You know, I was the web coordinator at the time. Got, again, a million years ago. Taught me the basics of like HTML and also what it's like to work for a sports team, which is definitely different than you know, working for a newspaper covering a sports team. Those, it's very different when you're kind of internal. So I did that role, web coordinator, for a few years. And then as this, at the same time, this thing called Twitter was blowing up. And not only were celebrities kind of discovering it, but businesses were discovering it. And they were discovering that, you know, you can kind of get attention to your brand by tweeting about it. You can get attention to your team by tweeting about it. And of course, you can get attention to your ticket sales by tweeting about them. So the NBA definitely leaned into, you know, Twitter and, you know, the whole social media aspect. So again, at that point, it was probably just Twitter and Facebook. So as the digital side of the Pistons organization started to expand, there was a lot of, at that time, there was an ownership change as well. So I've lived through an ownership change and all the stress that comes with that. And again, the whole organization was restructured and a kind of a digital department developed. And then eventually I moved over to kind of a hybrid role where I was responsible for still updating the website and then also helping out on the social side as well. So that's where I really got my kind of professional social media experience. So that was about 10 years. I'm going to round up a little bit. So all in all, my time with the Pistons was 10 years. I know people can't believe it. I just happened to.
I can't believe it.
I know, right out of college. And unfortunately, I have to tell people that that's kind of the exception, not the rule. Mm-hmm. And even still, I graduated in May of 2010 from college. And even still, there was a few months. I started in January 2011. So, you know, I feel like unemployed months are longer than regular months. So I felt like I was out of a job after college for like, it felt like years and years and years, but it really wasn't that long, you know? So the fact that I got in so young and I stuck it out, because it was definitely not smooth sailing. It was my first professional, real job. So there were definitely growing pains, but that experience taught me so much. I met so many people. Obviously, I met you, so that was great. And then, you know, after 10 years, we parted ways. You know, the pandemic did its thing. And a couple years ago now, wow, time really flies. The Lions, again, they went through not an ownership change, but a very kind of public coaching change, regime change, and they basically cleaned house, which is never, if you're on that receiving end of it, it's never great, but they were hiring for a social media manager, and I almost didn't apply for it because I had never had like the full manager position. You know, I always kind of, I had a manager who did the lion's share. Oh, pun intended.
I thought that was purposeful. That was
I'm going to lean into that. But my old boss did the lion's share of the social work, you know, so I didn't think I was all the way qualified, which is, again, something that women face. If we don't think we meet every qualification, we tend not to apply. And, you know, the other part of it was my wonderful support system during that time. A bunch of people sent me the job listing and I was just so nervous because I'm like, if I don't get it, everyone's going to know. And it's going to be so embarrassing. And like,
oh, interesting. Yeah.
You know, so I just, you know, thought about it, prayed about it, talked to my family about it. And at the end of the day, it's like, what's the worst that could happen if I just applied? And again, like, I don't want to say they were desperate, but again, they cleaned house. And so they had a lot of positions to fill.
You need to give yourself a little credit. I'm gonna stop you right there because you are an absolute rock star. And I think you even alluded to it, right? Where women, a lot of times I feel like, and I don't think it's just women, I think we just talk about it more, but I think we all have that imposter syndrome deep down, right? Especially as creatives and people working in this industry. But you're so right. There are so many jobs. My now job with Adobe, I was doubtful about. I was like, I don't have all of these qualifications. Like, I have some, but, you know, and it's funny because like now I'm in it and now I'm thriving. And, you know, with you, like, you are just such a rock star. And I remember when I first started working with the Pistons, you know, our team would deliver content to your team. So we had a close-ish relationship, but I always remember like early on, it was so easy to like ask you questions and be like, hey, how do you guys want this delivered? Or is this the right folder? And you were kind enough to walk me through that. I feel like that you have a gift in that way of connecting with people. And so I'm shouting you out here. I'm giving you your flowers a little bit. You know, you give yourself credit because, you know, they obviously saw something in you and you are like thriving with the Lions now. So I just wanted to say that about
you. Thank you, friend. And it's funny that you say that because it brings me back to, again, what we were talking about before we started rolling, is that not only is it like soft skills that matter, but also it's funny looking back, like, I am what they needed, you know, in terms of social media. It's such a hugely, like, an all-encompassing entity at this point that you need people to do different things. Like, a content creator and a content manager are not the same thing. And a lot of places, especially, I mean, sometimes it's just the issue of, you know, how many people you can hire in your social department. But, you know, skills is management. I love managing a calendar and I love slotting things in and I love figuring out, okay, what time of day will this piece probably do well, or what's going on in the week that this, you know, people will be, sometimes I post like on a Saturday, I'm like, okay, well, people are on their way to brunch, so maybe they'll want to watch this video, you know? So I think I say all that to say, like, there are other skills that matter, that I didn't even, not that I didn't realize I had, but I didn't realize how much of a professional asset that those kind of things can be. So like a manager is like, I'm in my sweet spot.
That's awesome. So I'm curious then, like, what are some of the skills that you think make a social media manager like really successful? Like, what makes you really successful in your role?
I think obviously communication is one of those things that you just have to be strong at. And that also means realizing who is responsible for what, you know, what piece of content and how you're going to get it to me, and making sure that they know that I'm the one who needs it, you know, because also in companies, sometimes there's a lot of silo, people operate in silos, like everyone kind of does their own thing. So I think just being able to zoom out a little bit and say like, okay, such and such is working on this video. I need them to know that when it's done, you send it to me. This is the size that I need. And, you know, this is the best way to send it. And also a small example that I think it ended up making a world of difference on my end is that we had all these highlight videos, and I believe maybe four or five content producers were responsible for a handful of, they kind of divvied them up among four or five people.
Got it. Yep.
And, you know, during the course of it, and this was going to be over like two weeks, maybe, you know, after the season was over. And I just, knowing that some people use Slack, some people text, some people use email, some people just drop a note in the project manager, and me knowing that, you know, this is all going to fall on me. I don't want to be like hunting down videos, you know, having that foresight to say, hey, everyone, when you're done with your video that you created, please send me an email saying that it's done. And you could include a link to it, or like tell me where it is, however you want to do that. But you need to like notify me that it's finished, and this is, you know, and this is where it is. Little things like that, I call it filling in the gaps, because a lot of people don't realize kind of the gaps in their own work style or their own communication style.
Or their own workplace even.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people don't even realize, the word click might be a little strong, but like, I don't think sometimes people realize that their, you know, their department isn't the only kind of one operating all these moving parts. So just being able to pull all the moving parts together, I think, has been able to help me tremendously. And also, you know, not to toot my own horn too much, but I will tell somebody no in a heartbeat.
That is a gift.
Listen, in personal and professional, like, I see a lot of people saying that, like, oh, like, I'm too nice, I have boundary issues. And I'm like, you better get over it.
I feel like we've had this conversation, because I'm one of those people.
And I mean, I get it. Like, you never, I always try to operate in, you know, in a very like calm space, and you can call it loving kindness, or, you know, what have you. Like, I try my best to treat people well, but at the same time, we're going to set some boundaries. I'm going to tell you what we're capable of, you know, like, literally social media has limitations.
Right.
You know, so it's like, it's not a question of whether or not I want to do this. It's just like, it's not possible, you know, so we're going to meet in the middle, or you're going to change what you're asking for. But I believe that setting boundaries, you know, especially, and you probably noticed this as a creative, sometimes our asks are geared toward like revenue, you know, things that are that will make revenue. And, you know, sometimes as a creative, you have to push back and say, like, okay, like, I know the partner wants this,
right?
But the partner might not get it, and I know they're signing the checks, but we're going to have to meet in the middle.
Do you ever find yourself kind of trying to connect your degree with your day-to-day now? Because social media wasn't, it definitely wasn't a major back then. But do you find yourself kind of questioning like, oh, I'm not really doing it in my major. But then again, you kind of are doing in your major. And how often do you have to kind of self-check yourself to say, hey, all of this kind of goes together now as opposed to 13 years ago when we both graduated?
So actually, I found it to flow really, really seamlessly. And if anything, I think my major and my degree helps me, because what is Twitter? What is social media? It's writing. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, companies, even if you don't go into this field, companies will always need good writers, strong writers.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, having that background is always like, that foundation is like, you can't go wrong. And then the journalism aspect to it, I'm actually really glad I have that, not just professionally, but, you know, I don't know if you want to get super topical, but like over the past couple of years, having media literacy, having, you know, what a credible source is, mm-hmm. knowing how to properly read information, those things have definitely come in handy over the past couple of years, you know, even more specifically. So, and I think part of why I chose an English major is that it is so all-encompassing. Because it was so broad. I don't even know if I knew what I wanted to, like, what I wanted my career to be when I chose English. It was almost kind of like, well, I like to write, and that's kind of like the best, you know, the best option. You know, you can't really, you can't really go wrong. I thought maybe, again, I thought I would be more of a journalist or more of like a, either online or, you know, magazine writing. I wish that was still a thing. I thought I was going to go that way. So I'm very, if anything, I have to, it's something I tell other people, which is that, you know, having a strong writing background is always key. And at the same time, you don't have to have a degree in like sports management to get in, to get into the sports world. You definitely don't need that. Sometimes I like joke that when I speak to high schools and colleges that the teachers are going to take my mics, because I'm always like, eh, do whatever you want. Like, you'll figure it out. Right. Oh, work's not that important. Like, it'll be okay. Like, I know the teachers are like, hold on.
Yeah, they're like, wait a minute. Who did we bring in here?
And I think that there's definitely some balance in all of that. Because if you think about in 2010, you mentioned it, Twitter was barely off the ground. Instagram hadn't been created yet. Facebook was exclusive. Someone mentioned that in a previous episode.
Yeah.
But if you majored in English before then, or before maybe 2012, 13-ish, it was, you were going to teach. And that's the path that I was going to take. But when I look back, it's like, if you think about writing papers and sourcing, like you said, but not only just in the social media aspect, for those who are listening who may be, you know, in high school or in college trying to figure out, well, you know, what should I major in? You're telling stories. You are writing, as you said. And English really helps you with structuring writing. So whether it's copywriting, whether it's social media, whether it's writing for, you know, Vogue or Sports Illustrated or
even
whatever.
Emails, like even a, emails. A general email.
It's a lost art. And
so true.
We are in that, in those final stages of where newspapers were still a huge thing or big enough. And so I always appreciate people who have that kind of background, because there weren't that many jobs available in those areas. But now there are copywriting jobs every time that you open LinkedIn, every time that you open Indeed or whatever. So it's still necessary to get those degrees. So
yeah, it's funny. The tail end of my college years was the era of like glamorous female centered media. Like mm-hmm. there were a lot of magazine jobs were like so glorified and they were so glamorous. Mm-hmm. There were so many movies about, you know, a heroine and she worked at a magazine and like the I love reality TV. So like The Hills was big and she worked at Vogue and it was such a, you know, such a thing. So I thought that is where I was going. But again, the other wrinkle about that is that I really wanted to be in sports. You know, that I always kept.
You knew that from early on. Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I love that because I feel like this is a common theme between all three of us is like we thought we were going to do one thing and then we transitioned to another. And Lauren, you mentioned something earlier that really resonated with me about, you know, unemployment months feel like an eternity. Ooh. And I like, yes, a million times. Yes. I remember right before I worked with the Pistons, I was unemployed for a chunk of months and I was struggling like mentally, like I was not okay during that time because I had, you know, just before I was working at Illinois and, you know, was doing really well there and thriving and thought, you know, oh, I'll be able to find my way. This is what I want to do. And this is, you know, the journey I'll be on. I'm curious, have you had moments like that where you've questioned, you know, where you're going? You know, you kind of mentioned it early in life, but I feel like you knew what you wanted to do. You kind of had a general direction. So have you had those moments of like, wait, what am I doing? Where am I going? Oh, because I feel like I've had those all throughout my career, not just when I first started.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And again, over with the Pistons, again, over the course of, you know, 10 years, you do wonder, am I going to stay here? Or what, you know, what do I want my life to look like? You know, full transparency, there was a point where I really hit my stride maybe about 5 or 6 years in where I thought I was going to be like a Pistons lifer. I thought they were going to honor me for 25 years of service working with the Pistons, you know, like some of my coworkers had gotten. That's what I thought, you know, that was in the cards for me. And then life did not happen that way. And losing your job is the trauma and you really do have to start from scratch and think like, okay, like what's next? Like, do I want to stay in sports? Even this is something I've been doing my entire professional career. Like, is that even an option? What am I even good at? Like, do I even have skills? Like what's going on? Do I even, you know, and that I will say like, it's almost like a unifying thing that eventually is something that everyone goes through. So
in some form or fashion,
you know, everyone will go through it at some point or another. So I don't know if I'm to the point where I can say I'm grateful for that experience, but you know, in a sense, you know, that time off. And again, we were dealing with, you know, the pandemic. So I don't even know if I would have had the mental capacity to deal with all of that at the same time, even though, you know, I had a little bit of overlap, but you know, the majority of lockdown, I was, you know, also unemployed and just wondering like, what am I going to be able to pay my rent? Like, will I ever be able to go on a vacation again? Like,
yeah, scary.
It was really scary. But it forces you to like think and just kind of reassess what you actually want. Like, I did a lot of free writing and journaling in that time. Like, okay, well, what am I good at? What do I like? You know, while at the same time reminding myself, like, even if I never hit send on another tweet about a team, I still offer XYZ to this world. And I think that's still just as important, especially when you're looking for a new job, to not get super, super bogged down in, well, if I don't have a job, I must be worthless. And it's really easy to, you know, to fall into that idea, especially if you come from place where, you know, you work for such a big entity that it's really easy to tie your identity to that. So, you know, it's it was really enlightening to kind of be on those parallel tracks. Like, I'm not my job. Like, hopefully I find, you know, another job that I'm good at, and I will, and things will work out professionally as they're supposed to. But at the same time, my worth is not tied up in what I do.
Yeah. You know? I think
it was definitely, whew, it was a lot.
I can only imagine. And I feel like that's with sports specifically, you know, it's like you have the fandom, but then you as an employee become so invested because you're living, breathing, working, like showering, like everything, Pistons, Lions, Warriors, you know, Auburn, whatever it might be. It is hard, I think. And early on in my career, I remember first working with the Pistons, I was like, I'm only here for work. I'm only going to work. I'm not going to do things that are fun on the weekend. Like, truly, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I lived in Michigan and I didn't get to explore all of these things. And like, from that point on, I was like, I'm not living my life that way. I need to do more. And I love the way you said that, right? Like, you're not your job, or not having a job or not, does not equate your worth. Right. And I think that's something that we all need to work on. And I think we're getting better at it, but you said enlightened. As much as, you know, you don't want to go through those rough moments, like, you exactly. looking back, you're like, oh wow, I really did. Yeah. I needed that. Yeah. I'm curious.
I was going to say, if anything, as a small note, it's now that I've gone through it, now I can help other people who have gone through it. A friend of mine is experiencing something similar, and I'm like trying to keep it vague, but like I don't think it's very up and down, and contracts are different than, you know, getting just like laid off. And so basically, having gone through it, now I can like give some semblance of advice and some semblance of empathy. And like, when I say, like, trust me when I say we've all been through it, you know? So it's always nice to be able to really empathize with other people in that position. So it's like, I hate that I went through it, but, you know, if it means that I can give other people advice, then I'm glad for it.
With that being said, what would be some advice that you would tell people who are in that space? You know, if we look at the tech companies now, there's been a lot of layoffs there, other industries, end of season. Some people are only seasonal contract workers. What would be some advice on things to do while you're kind of in that period? Not necessarily from a apply to every job, but how to stay mentally together and not drive yourself up a wall.
Right. Gosh, it can be really difficult. And I think giving yourself as much grace as possible is, you have to start there. Like, you have to go easy on yourself. I also think too, people have a lot of resources available to them that they might not have even realized. People who I like not barely talk to, but, you know, people who weren't necessarily at top of mind were sending me, you know, job listings saying, you know, oh, I know this person. So if you apply to this, let me know. Kind of remembering that you do have resources, and remembering that you do have people who are willing to help you out is always, you know, going to kind of keep you grounded. And again, I really think there's value in reminding yourself that, you know, I'm not what I do. You know, something else will come along in some way. It might not come the way when I think it's going to come, or when I want it to come, you know, and it might not look like what I thought it was going to look like. But, you know, I'm a firm believer in you putting in, you know, some of the work, and here I go, the universe will like meet you halfway.
Sure.
I'm such a woo-woo girl. So it was a lot of that kind of just like positive thinking. But at the same time, like, it's like giving yourself grace to really work through what is a trauma. And knowing that you don't have to apply to 10 jobs a day. If you have the bandwidth to apply for 3 a day, then that's great.
Or 3 a week, right?
Exactly. It's kind of like you have to go your own pace, and, you know, now is the time to take a step back and think, okay, like, what am I good at? What am I, what are my strengths? What are things that I'm interested in? And really you know, applying, looking for jobs through that lens. And I also think it's just nice to remind yourself of all the things that you're capable of, and, you know, you can start off from a professional aspect, but, you know, it again, it just helps even in life to remind yourself that you have great qualities. And, you know, if you treat people right and you do the right thing, you know, something will come along at some point.
For sure. For sure. I love that. And that's, I think the giving yourself grace is easier said than done, especially for me. 1,000%. And when you're in that mindset, I think if I were to, you know, give any advice, and I was in a different position because I was like from my master's degree to my first big girl job unemployed. But I think it was just, and again, I hate in retrospect saying it, but patience is key. I am the most impatient person. Like, it's a problem. I'm working on it, and I know I need to work on it.
It's a process.
It's a process. And I think that's part of it too. And I look back and I'm like, wow, had I not gone through that period, I wouldn't have had this other internship in between, which wouldn't have led me to this other opportunity, which wouldn't have given me this personal connection, right? And I think you even mentioned it, right? Our networks are bigger than we realize. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we get so locked into like, who knows me on social media, or who am I DMing all day, or who is on LinkedIn, and who are we connected with? But our networks in sports especially, I think, are larger than we realize. And I think the advice I have is not being afraid to ask for help in whatever way help means to you personally, I think is super important too.
I have a tip that really helped me too. It's like focusing on fewer job applications so that you can do those correctly. You know, I feel like that paid dividends. A tip that I learned was to match the language from the job description in your, put it actually in your resume, in your cover letter. And I promise that was like a game changer. I was like, I got so good at applying for jobs. Like, they turned out to like not be the right fit for one reason or another. But, you know, that tip alone, like, I almost started to get an interview almost every single time. So,
wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I love that.
Match the job description to the resume. Like, don't lie, don't fabricate, but like,
right.
That's key. Like, that people know now what they're looking for. That's the key part right there. Don't lie. Oh, yeah. But they're, don't lie. I mean, because I know at one point when I was applying for jobs, it was like, oh, well, you know, just apply, your qualifications match. But at the same time, it's like, you can't use the same resume for every job or the same cover letter.
Oh, yeah.
And I was doing that
never.
At one point. But to Lauren's point, it's like taking your time to actually sit with what they're asking for, what they're looking for, not just and we should probably do a resume episode at some point to kind of teach people like, hey, it's not just about what you've done or just about what you're good at. It's about what can you provide? We're asking for this. How much of this can you meet? But also leaving yourself some room for growth, because you don't have to be 100% qualified for what they're asking for. I would say somewhere between 75 and 85%, because you want to be able to do the job, but you also want to leave yourself some room to not, you know, be lateral in what you're asking yourself to do. So, it is Women's History Month, and we've had Karina here all month giving us a lesson on how to conduct interviews. So thank you, Karina, for that. But I also,
you're welcome. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm also here to also be in the space of support for women. And, you know, we see it on social all the time. We hear it on, you know, TV, and support women and do this and do that. So let's talk about support in the roles that you've had from colleagues, from friends, from champions and mentors and all that. Who are some of those people that you've worked with in the past who have helped you become the Lauren Harper that we know today? And what did that support look like in those spaces, whether it was with, you know, going back to your first internship or the Pistons and now the Lions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all the way back in college, the kind of the man who spearheaded the sports journalism program, he was a longtime sports writer in California, and he came to Morehouse College to start the sports journalism program. And from day one, he was a really strong mentor and a really good like advice person. And I think he saw, I think he saw my vision basically, and he was right there to kind of help me get, you know, from a networking standpoint. And he was like incredibly well connected. I mean, he covered the Warriors for years and years and years. I believe it was the Warriors, and then I think he also did baseball too. His name is Ron Thomas. If you're watching, if you're listening to this, Ron Thomas, I owe you so much. And I also think, to zoom out a little bit, for some reason, I've never had a specific one-on-one mentorship situation, but I'm going to use the words of my girl, Issa Rae, who I look up to so much.
Like, love her.
Love Issa Rae.
Obsessed.
She, right. She often talks about the value in networking across and not necessarily kind of up. And I think a lot of my support has come from friends in the same position and like bouncing ideas off of. I've been to lots of like NABJ seminars and talks and things like that. So there's been a lot of visibility of like high ranking women in sports. And I think I drew a lot of inspiration from them and seeing them as well. So, you know, that there's always a lot of discussion about visibility and representation and like how important is it really to just be able to see somebody without going deeper than that. But I think there is value in that, or there can be value in that. So I think just seeing women in baseball and in basketball and football kind of achieving those things, like Jemele Hill has been like, she's been visible basically every step of the way when I stop and think about it. So people like that, and just kind of knowing that I'm in the space that there are a lot of women present, you know, and I guess even knowing that women like came before me, not that Jemele Hill is like that much older than us, but you know, knowing that she did she did it, you know, I think that's always been really helpful and really useful. And I've always just been a curious person. So a lot of, I don't even know what the word you would use for, just like community talk, like my internet kind of, my peak internet era was kind of the late aughts blogosphere days where people would just really be writing their like earnest thoughts about the world and the workplace, and the comment section will be really robust and talking of everyone just kind of talking about their experiences. Not even for, I mean, yes, a public forum, but not, you know, not necessarily getting on a stage and saying like a really sanitized version of that, but just kind of being in community with people. And like I said, networking across and just exchanging stories, just knowing that other people are out there going through the same things that I'm going through helped tremendously.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love, you know, you mentioned, is it Rod Thomas or
Ron?
Ron Thomas.
Yeah. Shout out to Ron.
Shout out to Ron. There, we've all, I feel like if we have a Ron in our lives, so to speak, like we are blessed beyond belief. I have my version, the first guy and the first two people that gave me my start, Andy and Daryl, from Illinois. I mean, I'm still to this
day. Great gentlemen.
Amazing humans. And I think that for me, if I were to, you know, answer your question, Darius, it would be, they just treated me like a person, period. Like it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to take you under my wing because you're a young woman, or like nothing weird like that. It was just like, okay, you got to do the job too, like everybody else. And, you know, they treated me that way. They treated everyone the same. Every single student intern had very high expectations for all of us. And it really, they set the foundation for my career. But the support that I got from them was just like, you know, being able to talk to them or ask them questions or, you know, ask them tough questions sometimes, right? The questions that I was scared to ask, and that obviously came with lots of development and communication with them over time. But the biggest, the one thing that I've, the one way I've felt the most support from men specifically in the sports industry is they just treated me like anybody else, right? I didn't get a sense that I was being treated differently or, you know, anything like that. So that's my advice. That's my advice there. But
And you bring up a good point. Treating you like a regular person, not like specialized treatment. And I think that kind of gets lost in the shuffle a lot of times. It's like, it's not that you want preferential treatment. It's just, don't close the door in my face.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave the door open so that...
That part.
So how important is it to have male support as a woman in the industry? And how can us as men do a better job of supporting you in whatever way and however you want that support?
So I'm actually going to zoom out a little bit. I feel like I keep saying that. I know people are so tired of
zoom
words,
out. We work in video.
Exactly. Exactly. Sometimes it just helps. I think it helps to, and I'm going to again broaden this a little bit. I think a lot of times people don't realize the extent of what it means to kind of be inclusive and draw people in. Because it's important to have people who have different references or different backgrounds, or, you know, they use the phrase diversity of thought. And that is important to have people in the room. But at the same time, you have to be willing to fill in the gaps, you know, of their knowledge or of their experience. And like Darius said, don't close the door in their faces. Otherwise, you're setting someone up to fail. You're setting someone up to fail if your culture is this way and you decided to add, you know, a couple of like a woman or like a person of color to the mix, but you don't really do anything to kind of broaden that culture from a like professionally or socially, like all of those things, like you can't just leave them out to dry. And I think that's where a lot of people, that huge like diversity and inclusion push of a few years ago, I think we're starting to see that a lot of that was just talk. If you take it upon yourself to hire people from different backgrounds, different references, again, you have to be willing to teach them what they don't know. Or like I said, you're setting them up to fail. So I think if you're going to do that kind of work or consider yourself, you know, a mentor or a teacher, you actually have to put in that, that work, because you're just leaving that person to feel isolated.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like, you know, you kind of alluded to it, but things sometimes do feel very performative in the workplace, where it's like, oh, we're celebrating Black History Month in the office and we're having this awesome panel. But then behind the scenes, maybe there's not the same opportunities aren't offered to the entire team, right? And I think for me in my career, I've had some moments like that where I've been invited to the table and I've sat at the table, but then nobody not once asked for my opinion or threw it over to me. And I think one of the things my current boss does that I've noticed, and I think at Adobe, they do a great job of ensuring that the culture is very inclusive across the board. But he'll often, if, you know, when I first started at Adobe, I was very quiet. I didn't speak up a lot. And he would call me out and say, Karina, do you have anything to add? Simple, right? Like, and I think any of us can do that in a meeting, in a session where we're brainstorming, no matter if we're managing or not. Hey, so-and-so, I noticed you haven't said anything, and maybe they have nothing to say. That's fine.
Yeah.
But just the simple act of saying, hey, so-and-so, do you have any ideas? Lauren, do you have any ideas? Like, I think that's one very small thing that anybody can do that that keeps things inclusive. That makes a meeting inclusive, whether they chime in or I chime in or not, right? I still feel included if somebody asks me that, right? Because I'm paying attention. Even though I wasn't saying a lot in my first couple meetings, I was very much paying attention and trying to take notes and take it all in. But I wasn't at that space yet where I felt like, oh, I want to, you know, speak up on this, because I was still figuring everything out. So that's my two cents there. And I feel like it aligns kind of with what you said.
The corporate workplace is so funny too, just in terms of whose ideas get pushed in general.
Oh yes.
You know,
Yes.
Sometimes, and this goes through my whole career. Sometimes you kind of get the sense of, we have a lot of kind of red tape to get through. So whatever version of an idea I present is going to be watered down or denied anyway, because of factors that are like so above our control. So again, that's not necessarily it can be kind of an issue of like who's in the room, but sometimes it does feel very like, you almost think like, why are we having this meeting? We're just going to go with XYZ idea anyway.
You know? Right. Right. What we've done before, you know, five years in a row. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think you mentioned it earlier, but that kind of, it reminds me of something you said earlier where, right, your experience working with the Detroit Shock and a smaller team was in your benefit. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't realize is, sometimes the team that you're on, the size of the team that you're on, that can really impact your career for better or for worse. So, and again, you might not have control over all of it, but I think, you know, for those just starting out or those kind of reevaluating what you want out of a job, sometimes smaller teams are better because you can get your ideas that you are really passionate about that you know will be successful, you know, across that finish line, like that you kind of mentioned. I'm curious, have you gone through anything like that? Or is that something that comes up? I feel like I dealt with that in a lot of ways. Like at Auburn, I could do a lot more and be more creative. You know, at the Warriors, there's a lot more people that it has to go through before an idea even gets a green light. And that's just the idea, not even the execution of everything. So.
Yeah, I've definitely experienced that where there's just so many moving parts and so many people who have to, I was going to say people who have to okay it, but sometimes it's just people who feel like putting in their two cents and just being another cook in the kitchen, you know? And so by the time you're done with it, you're just like, not never mind, but you know, it turns into like such a big to-do that didn't, you know, and it's like, it didn't need to be all this. And then, you know, finally somebody ends up vetoing it anyway. So
right.
I think sports is definitely it has that kind of set of unique challenges where there are so many people who have to put their stamp of approval on it that it can be tough, especially again, as a creative, and also knowing what type of content does well and not getting the green light to execute that kind of content. And then also being asked, well, how come our content isn't doing better? So, you know, it's kind of you're answering to everybody without people realizing, not they're the issue, but you get people realizing like, well, if you're going to kind of prevent the creative team from working with the players and you know player driven content does the best, or maybe they don't know. Maybe the people who are saying no are not the people who know that player driven content does the best.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of get stuck in the middle, and then people will compare you to other teams. And it's like, well, sometimes it just comes down to this team's PR staff is a little more lenient and their team is, they're doing really, really well. They made it to the conference finals, you know, all the time.
So
the fan sentiment is on their side and we just can't do that here. There is a lot to take into account when you do the kind of work that we do.
Yeah. And you have to, like you said, be aware of who you're working with and in any given space, right? You don't have control of who is on your team or who your colleagues are. but you do have control of yourself and your voice and, you know, speaking up. And I think, you know, to bring it back to Darius's original question of like, what can people do to help, you know, support us in any space? I think on the topic of ideas, right, and not getting an idea greenlit or not, one thing one of my previous managers did was, you know, after a meeting, I think one of the ideas I had pitched, it was axed. But after the meeting, he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, that was a good idea. Like, let's table it. Not for, you know, we can't do it now, but let's put it on the producer's list and maybe we'll get to it next year." And I think even that, right, that made me feel, okay, I'm being heard. I'm being appreciated at the very least, right? Maybe for whatever reason, we can't execute this idea now, but that's when I felt super supported and I felt like, oh, cool. Okay. Like, all right, we can't do it now, but maybe we'll do it next year. Like, sweet. Awesome.
Yeah.
And I felt great. Like, I was like, okay, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, we get down on ourselves when ideas do get cut and, you know, but that's the nature of the business. We can't do every single possible idea. I mean, we could, but then we'd drive ourselves insane. But that was one way I felt super supported. And, you know, I think it's just so important to have those people on your side. And I think you mentioned it with Issa Rae, right? You know, working across and networking across, not necessarily up or down, right, is super important. And I think without that, I don't know where I would be in my career. And not even from a, like, career standpoint, but just a personal standpoint and like my development and growth has been essential. And so those people are super key to just navigating this industry because it is hard. And like navigating corporate America is not easy, especially for, you know, as a woman and as a woman of color, there's a lot of extra things that go on that, you know, we don't necessarily talk about all the time. But I think we're talking about it between ourselves. But yeah, that's just, that's something that I feel supported in a lot of ways. But Lauren, I'm curious, you know, you've transitioned from the NBA to the NFL. And, you know, I think for some people, at least for me, I would be like, ooh, that's tough because the schedules are different. The personnel is different. The roster sizes are different. What was that transition like for you? And what are the biggest differences between working in the NBA and working in the NFL? Yeah,
it's funny. The obvious comparison that most people make, as you said, is the schedule. But for some reason, the schedule is kind of the least of my, you know, things to worry about. It's like one game a week, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Can you imagine one basketball game a week? Like,
I can.
That would be insane. Your season would be so long. But funnily enough, what balances that out is that now that I have more responsibilities and I travel, sometimes I'm like, I'm more tired than I would have been in like a 3-game Piston homestand. Like, how am I just this tired, you know?
Travel does it to you, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. Travel takes a lot out of you. And I think there are a lot of differences. And it's been interesting to kind of see them play out. For one thing, the NFL is just, it's bigger. It just has a bigness to it. Like, I don't think it's like what they call like proprietary information, that like the amount of like followers the Lions have compared to the amount of followers the Pistons have, it's like there's like no contest, you know. I would say that it gives you less room for error, but you know, a professional account is going to be the same, a professional account regardless. So it wasn't so much that, you know, from a fan perspective. The NFL is just like more popular, which I didn't I want to say I almost didn't realize, just because, you know, I come from a basketball family. But like, I wear Lions gear and like people come up to me on the street and and like say and mention it. And they say, oh, like, are you a Lions fan? Like, is that your team? Right. They say it with an attitude, but it's
what? Okay. Let's pause for a second. What is it about some people? I had the same thing with the Warriors. Yeah. Like, oh, are you a Warriors fan? I'm just wearing this shirt because I like it. And I know some people do that, and some men do that. Like, my brother wears a Cubs jersey because he likes the colors. He's not a Cubs fan. He's a Sox fan. And no one's going up to him being like, oh, are you a Cubs fan?
I can't figure out if they mean it to say, like, and I hate this. I mean, this city has a very like love-hate relationship with the team. So I think sometimes it's an air of, oh, you still support them even though they're
losing. Okay.
I happen to be wearing a Lions sweatshirt after a really bad loss, and like I went to get gas or something, and I was like in an elevator, like multiple strangers were like, what were they thinking last night? Like, what was that about? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I know, man. Yeah. Like, and I just say that I'm a fan because I'm not going to, you know, tell you where I work. But I say all that to say, like, I wore so much Pistons gear, and I don't think anybody, you know, looked twice. But wearing Lions clothes, like, people will, like, come up to you.
Yeah,
and remark on
start it. Start a conversation.
Yeah, or try to. And I'm just like, yeah. I've experienced, unfortunately, a lot of losing seasons with the Pistons as well. So, you know, I think that's just like a team thing in general, is that what happens on the court or the field, sometimes it can spill over into, you know, the office building, whether you let that affect you or not, which that's the first thing they tell you is – the on-court performance is no excuse for not your engagement numbers or what have you. It's like you're almost not allowed to take that into account, even though that explains the poor numbers. So you kind of just have to like work around that. You have to be that much more creative.
Yeah. It's like you said earlier, not tying yourself to the job or not tying yourself to the wins and losses. We spent a lot of time talking about the work side of things, but what do you like to do for fun in the off season when you have some free time, which I know is a commodity in our industry, but what do you love to do for fun? What do you do for self-care?
So funnily enough, I think the NFL is so intense in those 17 weeks, or hopefully more than 17 weeks. But then the flip side is that when you're done, like for me, I've been able to work remotely just because of like such the lack of, you know, we're not playing games, so there's like not that much content. So I'm really big on my free time, and I love my free time. I spend a lot of it reading. I love to read. Again, that's my English major. My English major thing.
There it is.
I've always loved to read. And again, like going back to work, I've been able to like knock out so many more books because now that I travel more, I like read on the plane.
Yeah. What are you reading? What's on your list right now?
A lot of women's fiction. I made kind of a pact with myself that I was tired of reading like academic books or serious books after college. So I'm like, I need to keep it light. I need to keep it fun. Yep. So a lot of women's fiction. I'm reading this semi-biography of Marie Laveau, which is, she was this kind of basically a voodoo priestess back in kind of early 19th century New Orleans. And it's just been really fascinating to read that. So that's kind of on my, you know, what I'm in the middle of right now, but I'm always on the lookout for kind of like women's fiction. The term chronically online gets thrown around a lot. And I would definitely consider myself chronically online, partially because it's my job to kind of know what's, you know, what people are talking about. But I also I really am interested in pop culture as an area of study, as pretentious as that sounds, because I believe media matters. I believe the stories that we tell matter, who gets to tell them, what stories are told, what audience they get to, what figures, what public figures we pay attention to, how those public figures are related back to us, what that says about us as a society in any current moment. And that bleeds over into sports, you know, whose narratives get, you know, picked up as like a feel good story, and why, and what does that say about, again, us as a society? I mean, I could go on and on, but I believe, you know, pop culture matters and media matters. And I like to try to find ways to bridge the gaps between people who talk intelligently about sports and people who talk intelligently about pop culture. Because those things don't always overlap. And it's kind of funny. One joke I got tired of hearing about during the Super Bowl, if you'll pardon the quick tangent, is that there was supposed to be a reunion episode of The Real Housewives of Potomac on Super Bowl Sunday, but obviously they didn't air it. It was just the weekend off because, you know, the Super Bowl programming.
Right.
And a lot of kind of people in the Housewives, the Bravo universe, kept saying things like, oh, they just could have aired it because people who watch Bravo don't care about the Super Bowl. And vice versa. Like, they're two totally different audiences.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, no, they're not.
Yeah, you're like, what about me? No?
Excuse me? What's going on here? And I just, I, you know, that's obviously such like a silly example, but I think it speaks to this idea that like, you can pull references and you can be interested in so many things, and those things can help. Those things can, you know, the way they intersect, those things can help you. That was part of the reason why I was hired, was, you know, my broad reference of like knowledge and pop culture and those kind of things that I'm able to incorporate into my silly little Twitter captions, you know, like I think it's really a valuable skill to be able to have that overlap. And it also, again, another tangent, it makes you aware of how one group talks about another group. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
There was a time where like blogs or anybody like pop culture blogs, they wouldn't even, if for some reason a player would make it kind of into like pop culture news, sometimes they wouldn't even get the guy. They wouldn't even spell the guy's name right. They wouldn't even get the team right that he was on. But because there's no overlap, the people who are reading that pop culture blog didn't even know that they're being presented with misinformation. So I think just having a wide range of knowledge and following pop culture and kind of what I call writing about frivolous things intelligently is something that I'm really interested in. I like to read a lot of good writing. I wish the blogosphere, I wish the long form blogs would come back, because that was like my favorite kind of style of like internet writing. And now it's become so distilled. But I say all that to say, I love to read. I love to read articles on the internet. I like to travel. I like to play tennis. So just your general girl about town, enjoying the off season, enjoying the,
I love it,
the free time.
That's amazing. And I love so many things you said there, but I think one of the things that stands out is that, you know, and I had this view early on when I started in sports that I needed to watch SportsCenter 24/7. I needed to know every single headline that was going on. And I partly did, right? Because my, you know, the guys at Illinois, they love to discuss that. And I wanted to be part of it. But I think I kind of stifled my personal interests early on in my career and didn't always share, right? Because I think there's an embarrassment about, oh, you watch like reality TV. But for me, working in the video space, watching reality TV actually, I think, made me a better editor because I was able to see how they cut the video, how they cut certain lines, how they weaved the storyline together. And, you know, I loved what you said there about that is what helped you. Your interest in pop culture actually helps you in your day-to-day role. And I think, you know, advice for the listeners out there is to, you know, lean into the things that you are passionate about. They may not make sense, you know, for your day-to-day in your career, but they will in some way, or in some form or fashion, right? Like you're interested in them for a reason, like lean into that. So I love that. I love that how you even are able to relate it to your day-to-day job and your daily life. That's amazing.
The listeners can't see that we're both like nodding so hard right now at each other.
it's like
exactly. A bobblehead. I know we're like two bobbleheads here. I just think to put a bow on what you just said, like, and this touches on like how I feel about things like networking. And I think showing up someplace as your authentic self, you know, as cheesy as that may sound, but showing up to someplace, doing what you have to do, and as your authentic self, I think will get you just so far in life.
Preach. Snaps. We can do snaps. They can't hear the head nods, but we can do snaps.
We can do the snaps. So, yes, Lauren, exactly. as I mentioned before, it is Women's History Month, and I'm so glad to see both of you in the spaces that you are and have been. What does it mean to you, or in, you know, you may have to even think about how often you even think about this. What does it mean for you to be a woman in the space that you are? You've been in the NBA and are in the NFL now, but what does it mean to you when you think about you being in that space on a daily and belonging in that space because you do belong where you are?
Thank you. I feel so just like gratified, and I feel so happy that I get to be here, and whether or not I even like speak to people individually, just knowing that people can see me in this space, you know, is so rewarding. I feel like I'm like a doorstop. Like, I just want to keep the door open. I want to keep that energy going and, you know, leave a place a little bit better than it was when I found it. And, you know, they always say we lift as we climb, because you know, this is my, second decade, right, in this industry. So it's like, okay, I don't know if I'm at the top of the mountain quite yet, but I've come a long way. And now that I am where I am, I can bring other people along, you know, and I like just holding that space. Cause as far as I'm concerned, I'm holding space for the next woman to come through, you know, and if you need something, I got you, or I can at least point you in the right direction, you know? So I feel like I'm just like a link in a chain. You know, and I like that. So I just feel like I'm just going to hold up my end of the bargain and hopefully bring somebody in after me. And, you know, I think that's about the best you can, the best you can hope for.
That's beautiful. And I feel like that's, we're in a phase in our careers where we have that opportunity and that ability. So I think, sometimes for me, it feels like there's a lot of pressure sometimes with that. But at the same time, it is something to be really proud of, because, you know, I think back to when I was a little, you know, 20 something, not knowing anything and wishing that I could be in a position that I am now. And sometimes I forget to take a step back and think like, wow, I'm doing it. You know, and I feel like you kind of expressed something similar there.
There are two things I want to say to that, which is what, you know, absolutely everything you just said. It reminded me, I was probably still in high school. I was watching maybe the tail end of a basketball game, of a finals game. And after an interview, maybe it was like Tony Parker, after his televised interview, like a staffer, I'm sure she was in PR, she had her clipboard, she pulled him to the side and like spoke to him and said, I need you to do X, Y, Z, blah, blah. And he listened to her and he did it. And I don't know where I was in my, like I said, I was probably like applying to colleges, stressed out, that whole thing. But just like seeing this lady on TV working for a team, you know, she just happened to be on TV. She wasn't a broadcaster, but just, I was just seeing this person and I was like, I wonder what she does. I want to do that. I'm an oldest child, so I like to like boss people around. So I'm like, I want to tell somebody, I want to tell a player, I need you to do X, Y, Z and have him turn around and do it. Mind you, they don't listen to me these days. So we're still working on the listening part, but you know, for the most
part. But you're in the space. You're in the space.
Exactly. So exactly. So I said all that to say that I just being able to see that woman. Yeah, I don't even know her name. I don't know what she did, but literally, and again, we talk about the limitations of representation and just like a symbol, but literally I am in the career that I'm in because I saw a woman doing what I, you know, something that I thought was cool. So, you know, I think just our presence will go further than we can ever, imagine. And then the second thing, and you kind of touched on it, that, pressure. I actually wrote this down because I wanted to like mention it as kind of a downside, not of being like a woman in this industry, but like in general, I think there's a lot of pressure to not only be a symbol, but there's a pressure to leverage the access that we have in these spaces. So much of this industry is who you know and who you can meet. And unfortunately, a lot of opportunities are doled out based on who's top of mind and who I'm cool with and, you know, who I see around and we've had conversations or maybe not, just again, who's top of mind. And that you could talk about whether that's fair or not. That's kind of like the way things are, you know, who you know has always been a piece of advice. But I think there's almost a pressure to like be extra ambitious and extra popular because you never, you can't just rely on your skills all the time or you're made to feel like you can't just rely on your skills all the time. You know, you start to get the feeling that like things are a popularity contest or, hey, like, well, I'm in the same room as Doris Burke. Shouldn't I go over and give her my business card? Or I'm in this guy, like he's over NFL digital media. Like, shouldn't I go up and speak? So just like this feeling that you, there's this pressure to just like network because you're in these spaces, whether or not it's appropriate, whether or not that's your, how you get down. For me personally, I'm not always the most aggressive networking type person. And I say all that to say like, it's all about finding that balance. You know, there's a time to be super intentional. Like if you're at a conference and you want to meet your counterpart at a different team, then that's one thing. Yeah. That's like, okay, I have a specific goal in mind. And then also like the other side of it is if you show up and do what you have to do and present as your most authentic self and form relationships organically, that's just as valuable. You know, like you don't have to, because you didn't land every opportunity that wasn't even presented to you in the first place. You know, like that's, whether or not that's fair is like, okay, well, maybe that wasn't the opportunity for me. If that's how I had to go about it, if it was based on who this lady knows and I don't know her, it's like, okay, well, I can't do anything about that. But now I know that that's how people get down. Okay, maybe I can move a little more intentionally. Maybe I can work a little bit more on relationship building. But again, at the same time, like networking laterally. Hey, the people who I do come in contact with, they know what I'm about. My work speaks for itself. And, you know, maybe not to be like transactional, but it's like, that's, there you go. That's somebody you know. It doesn't always have to be such an aggressive networking situation. Sometimes it's just about showing up and doing you, and those doors will end up, you know, working working for you. But I wanted to give that piece of advice because I think younger people, especially women, women of color, you know, we have to work twice as hard. And I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves once we do get our feet in the door, because these spaces are so tough to get into. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to like meet every single person that we can possibly meet, because we never know. We're last hire, first fire. So like, I gotta hang on to this for dear life. And it's like, it doesn't always have to be that way. You know, you have to like, your how you feel about yourself and how you move in the world, that will, that is what will open doors for you. I just wanted to give people that advice.
Yeah, there's different ways to network. I mean, especially now, you can send a nice LinkedIn message. You can send a DM on social media, Instagram, Twitter, whatever platform you love. Or you can reach, find their email, find a mutual connection, try to meet them in person. There's so many different ways. And I think that's the beauty of our industry now, is like, it is easier in a way to network in the, in whatever way you're comfortable for yourself, which wasn't always the case. Like I remember back in college. And again, I feel like we were like back in my day,
back in the day,
back in my day, young kiddos didn't anyways, you know, but I think truly, like I need, if I wanted to network with someone, I was like, oh, I need their email. I got to find their email. And it, not everything was listed. Like staff websites for sports teams didn't always list the staff and their emails and all that. So I love that advice. It is incredible advice. And so many of the things that you've said throughout today have just resonated and have been inspiring to me. I'm obsessed with you. I have been, from yeah, like I feel like you said, it's full circle.
As many of you are aware of, this is the end and last episode recognizing Women's History Month. We've had some amazing women. We've had some talented women. We've had some great advice given by women. And it's been an honor to be a part of the conversation in many different factors. One, as a supporter of women in the sports space, as well as just listening to the conversation of sometimes the biggest thing that we can do is the smallest and easiest thing. And that is to really just open our ears and listen, and to open our eyes and just see what is going on around us. You don't have to be performative. You don't have to do it for clicks and likes. Sometimes you just have to do it to be a good person. We have a lot of people who will, you know, say, be nice to people and all this, be kind and all this. And I like to say, just do right by people. And the two of you are a great example of doing right by people and wanting to not be the last. Even if you're the first, you don't want to be the last. Lauren mentioned keeping the door open. I love that, because there are a lot of opportunities out there, yet so few opportunities. And thank you both for what you've done in this industry, what you do for this industry, what you do with this industry, and just keep being great and awesome. Lauren, what you do for the now the Detroit Lions, the city of Detroit, you know, having worked across for the Pistons, keep doing that. You're an inspiration. You are someone that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, maybe a year from now, someone will say, oh, I saw Lauren Harper doing this, and that inspired me to want to go into this, whether it's reading, whether it's social media, whether it's working in the NFL, whether it's being just awesome. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for being that. This has been one of the greatest experiences, just listening to all of the stories. And we have a tough act to follow now that, you know, Karina has been our guest host for 4 weeks. And so thank you for hosting and creating a new space for us to kind of follow and be in a space where we can be more supportive and open the eyes of many people to new faces in this space. So Thank you.
You got me emotional over here. You got me emotional. Oh. People can't see. I'm like tearing up.
And none of that was written down. So, you know, that is all from the heart and the head.
I love it. No, I appreciate it. I'm going to add to it too.
I'm so grateful to be here. First of all, this is a great space that has been curated. So I hope that people have gotten something from it. I'm so honored to be here. Karina, you have been such a support this whole time. I feel like I don't even know how long we've been friends. I just consider it 10 years. Like, I don't even know at this point. But I mean, I look up to you so much. I think you're so talented.
Y'all got me. Seriously,
I'm trying to keep it together myself. But like, this is just a perfect example of like, the fact that she even asked me to be on this show. She's always looking out for other people. And again, she's so, so intelligent, so, so talented. I'm just so happy to know you. And I'll come back anytime. Y'all. We should take our show on the road.
Oh, listen, if we get enough listeners, I hope you let us know. If you like the podcast, we'll do this. Cause Lauren and I go way back. We just touched the surface of all these topics. No, but I appreciate we clicked
our
from day one.
Our first conversation for real was like at a bar after a game.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you meet.
And back in our youth.
As long as you do.
Exactly. Back in our youth, when we used to go to bars after games, that's when we started talking, and we just haven't stood up since.
And the story continues. No, I appreciate, to echo what you said, Darius, Justin, all the folks behind the Sports Creative podcast, thank you for giving us this space. It has been a joy to connect with other women and, to connect with you and to have, like I said, a space to have these conversations has been amazing. And Lauren, you have been an incredible guest. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to all of those of you who have tuned in during Women's History Month, listening to the Sports Creative Podcast. We love our listeners and are so excited for you guys to, continue and hopefully be a part of the conversation as we move forward. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you have a great week.
Thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.